Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Along my side,
Gary Michaels. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. You all right over there?
Oh, yeah. Just one earphone's working over here, so it's kind of weird.
Oh, that's not cool.
No.
All right.
I'll be fine.
Our guest today is a legend of local hockey.
Holy cow, yes.
He is. Oh, man. I don't know that it gets any more legendary than Don Korth.
No.
Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So, Don, you've been involved with hockey for how many years?
I started in 78. I've been in around hockey since the Golden Eagles, the first year that they were here. We went, and I went to one game, and I was hooked. My boy Darren, he started when he was 10 years old, and that was in 78, and it's just kind of went from there.
All right, so... So was that what got you into hockey? Was your son starting, or was the Eagles coming here? Because you didn't grow up playing hockey, right?
No. We played on the canal with skates that had no support in them or nothing. One of my neighbors asked me if I'd like to go to a hockey game, and I said, oh, not really. And then about 2 weeks later, he says, hey, do you want to go to a hockey game? And I says, yeah. And once I got there, I was hooked. Lenny Frigg was one of my favorite players.
Oh, yeah.
Hard skater, hard worker. Was a great guy, and only met him once, though. So that's really good. And then Darren just become interested when he – Darren was really little, was just barely born when we first started going. And then when he was about 10, he says, hey, I want to play hockey. And so that's how it got started.
Oh, cool.
I remember going as a kid to the Golden Eagles and not knowing the game, hockey. You know,
it took me a while to learn. We spent hours and hours over at the Murray Rink, where the old Murray outdoor rink. Where they put it on their old swimming pool. Yeah, we used to go over there at night and skate and Darren got pretty good skater and stuff, and then he wanted to play goal, and so he played goal. After about 3 years, he started playing goal.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah. I loved it, but it was good, and we just spent a lot of time trying to get to know the game and stuff like that.
It's too bad that they closed that old Murray rink down, because that's the first place I ever skated to, and it was just... And I, Gary, the same as you, and apparently the same as you, Don, the first way I got introduced to hockey was a couple of high school friends took me to an Eagles game.
Yeah.
That was the first time I ever saw it, and I definitely was interested in it from that point on. And you could go and just pay a couple bucks and skate, because you couldn't play hockey there. They didn't have figure skating there. It was just plastic skates and skate.
It was a great place to play. I don't think I went over there very often that I didn't see the Qualawachuks.
Oh, yeah.
And they were just little guys.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've heard. They'd scoot around all everybody, and I thought, man, I wish I could skate like them. And then they left, and so, you know, they went to Canada for a while, for where they really got going. And so.
Yeah, I've tried to actually reach out to Stevie to try and get a hold of him and have him on the show, too, and Brian. But Stevie, like, I had his phone number, and he had a camp, and I had his email, and all of it's changed. And all the people that I knew that grew up with him, Mike Brennan and Jeremy Miller, they used to have his number, reached out to them. They're like, oh, no, the number doesn't work anymore. So we've got to track him down, because obviously he's got quite a story.
I heard he went up to Fernie. You know, he went up to Fernie and did some stuff up there, and that's in Canada, and... But somebody told me he's back in Colorado, so I don't know.
All right, well, we're going to track him down.
I want to tell you, now I've lost my train of thought. Anyway, go on.
Okay, all right. Okay, so, Don, it's your kid was 10, he was playing, and at some point you decide, you become a coach.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What was your first team you coached?
Well, first of all, my attitude is basically... The way I do things is that I'm not going to be standing on the sidelines waiting for something to happen, I dove right in and started to go, and I wanted to be an assistant coach or do whatever. And so Buzz Burns says, hey, you can come and he didn't know me, and he didn't know I couldn't skate. But anyway, he came and said I could be his assistant coach, and so I couldn't wait for that day to come to go there. And
what team was that?
Huh?
What team?
I don't know. I don't. It was just
like a youth team.
Yeah, a youth
okay.
team.
Okay. All right.
And at the time, I worked at the Mill Creek Spire Station, and so every day I got off a shift, I would go over to Hygieia,
yeah,
and skate on my own and stuff. And a couple of guys come and help that came there quite often too was helping me try to learn to skate and go backwards and all that stuff. And so.
So how many? So that's another thing you and I obviously have in common is Salt Lake County Fire. You were for how many years were you a fireman?
31 years.
31 wow. years.
That's awesome.
And you retired in
2005.
2005. Wow. You've got, I mean, you've left quite a legacy there, too, and, you know, we all, your name still comes up quite a bit when we talk about, and people are telling stories.
It's probably all bad, though.
No, it's not all bad. It's not all bad. There's the one story that you told the other day that I'd heard before with the Doncourt doors, which is a great story, but it's not a bad story. It's just one of those things that happens in the fire service, but no, it's just stuff like that. We've all had things, and do you care to tell that story, or should we?
What, about the doors falling off?
Yeah.
But
you were was that at Station 17?
Yeah, it was. I was at Station 17, which is on Redwood Road, right across from the community college. It's no longer there, but anyway, I was given a tour. I like to give tours. I thought that most firefighters didn't give very good tours. And these are kindergartners, okay? And this was in the middle of the day. And so you open the doors up, and you show them around and stuff, and our engine set right next to the coat rack, so you couldn't open the doors on that side, which is the passenger side. And so I said, oh, I'll pull this out. Everybody get out of the way. And so, but I left the one door up, and it hit that beam in the fire station,
yep.
And that door comes down and goes kaboom. And it's about 500 pounds, so they're very, very heavy. And he comes down and bang, and all the little kids started to cry. And I was almost in tears myself. And it wasn't a fun day. I couldn't even hardly function. It was so bad for me.
Yeah,
it didn't hurt anybody and everything. I got suspended.
You did?
Yep.
Oh, that part I never heard that part of the story before.
Anyway. They told me for 3 months, and about a week and a half after I was suspended, the chief calls up and says, you guys come down. I want to talk to Korth. So I went down there, and he looked at me, and he says, you can drive now, and that's all he said.
Wow.
So you're back.
So for those that don't know, so on the older fire engines and still some of the ones we have now, instead of the doors on the side, you know, all the equipment
yeah.
doors, they opened out instead of being roll-up yeah. doors. So, and they were big, heavy doors. So when you'd open them up to get out your air pack or an axe
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah.
and they just hang up. And Station 17, the old 17, it was really narrow. And there's a mark on where you hit part of the door. But you know what? There's a marks on at Station 6, old Station 6,
yeah.
and like all the places from the
Kearns.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's like our REO Speedwagon.
It's exactly like our REO Speedwagon, which is why I'm one of the only ones that's willing to drive it, is because I've been basically driving those things forever.
Well, you like to break down in it. So
oh, I'm, man. I, so we have, a 1954 REO Speedwagon that we use for 103.5 The
oh,
Arrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool. It used to be a fire engine. It used to be a utility engine,
you
like
know,
an Aaron Light.
REO used to have trucks. They used to make
oh, yeah.
trucks.
Yeah. And this one we have vapor locks all the time. So
oh, yeah.
a lot of times Gary and I are going out to concerts or whatever together, and he's following me in his truck, and then I'll just have to pull over and wait
yeah.
for the fuel to cool off. But anyway, okay, so let's get back into hockey. So because we can tell fire stories. You put firemen in a room, and they can tell fire stories,
yeah.
and none of them are – most of them are not arable.
Right.
Right?
And,
most
and they,
of them are
– You know, they all stories, even hockey stories, get better every year.
Yeah.
Right.
It happened 30 years ago, and they can't even hardly remember what the hell happened, but they still tell them.
Yeah. They just make it more creative that way. Yeah, for sure. All right, so you start coaching, and man, you've been coaching forever. So you started with Buzz Burns, who again is he's another hockey legend, coached forever, and then had his son Larry, and then their grandson played with my son as well. And I mean, again, so that's in Utah. You're like, you're Utah born, and you guys have.
I was actually born in Montana.
Okay,
I've been in Utah for a long time.
You're a Utah guy though, and yeah, your hockey experience is all Utah, and you guys come in and create knowledge here. And learn, and then start passing that on. Because when I first started playing hockey, which was in 1989, like, you were already the guy. You were the reference. So you've coached all these years. And at what point did you start working with USA Hockey as their, like, because you coach coaches?
Yeah. First of all, when I started, there was one level one, level two, and level three. But you didn't have to do any of it if you didn't want to. And not until 1998 did USA Hockey make it mandatory that you do some coaching. But it was a pretty well-organized program, but it was still kind of spread out, and they didn't have much direction of what you could do. So, for instance, You could take a level one, or you could take a level three and then a level one if you wanted.
Oh, okay.
And they kind of progress up, and in 2011 they changed that to what it is today, is that you can't do that. You only have one level, and it expires. And every other when they first started, everything was good for 3 years. All of them, that level was good for 3 years.
Yeah.
And so anyway. That's kind of how it got going. And in USA Hockey, I started in 2003 with USA Hockey. And the reason I went there, I wanted it, was because I got assistant coaches that are coaching Bantams or Peewees or whatever it was that we were coaching. And they only had one clinic a year.
Right.
And if they can't make it, then it was bad. And so I went to Al Bloomer, which is in Montana. He was a national chief for a long time. He wasn't at that time, and he was over our district as our district coach and chief, and asked him, and he kind of gave me a bad time, and he says, "Who are you? What da da da?" And I says, "Well, I'm willing to take this on and do it, and make it so that people can get certified." And so that's how I got involved in it, and then I just took off from there, and one of my goals was to hold clinics in different places so people didn't have to drive and work so hard to get it.
Right. Yeah. 'Cause I mean, to be a coach in USA Hockey, it's one, it's voluntary. And two, you have to be certified, which means you have to pay out of your own pocket to go be certified.
Right.
Yeah. And then
I did that last year.
Yeah.
Level one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, and it's cool though. Like the people you've got to meet coaching all those things, because like when I took my level four from you, you brought in Constantine and the old Air Force, the Air Force coach.
Yeah, and that guy's Tony.
Yeah, he's phenomenal to learn from.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, I never, ever should have thought this, but I was like, man, I don't need my level four. Like, what am I going to go learn today that I haven't already learned by sitting on the bench for the Grizzlies or playing college or whatever? You know, I figured I'd had enough experience, but I just thought this is going to be a waste of time. And I went and I learned a ton. And it's so, and I've talked to so many people that say the same thing. Like, what do I need to learn? And it's like, We as Utah guys, have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
When you bring in guys like Kevin Constantine, and what was the guy's name for Air Force?
Saratoni.
He's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So tell us some stories, man. Who have you met?
Frank, the Air Force coach, is very colorful, and he's a really a good speaker.
Yeah.
Constantine too. Is,
yeah.
I enjoyed him a lot, but I've been to Lake Placid three times. If you ever go to Lake Placid, plan on about a day and a half to get there. There's no easy way to go to Lake Placid, New York. Anyway, and so I met all these guys, and you don't really get to know them a lot unless you happen to just be in a group with them.
Yeah.
But I met a lot of great coaches, from juniors and stuff. Mike Hastings is the one that coached the World Juniors this year for the USA. I roomed with him a couple of times when I was Lakeland camped.
Oh, okay.
I did Lakeland camps. They were camps mainly for junior kids that didn't have an opportunity probably to be looked at and stuff like that. But they were very high level, very, very organized. And I did that. I just happened to get into that. Paul Contreras, a guy from Colorado, called me and says, we're going to have some Lakeland camps here, and I didn't know anything about them. And he says, will you bring some Utah kids? So I took like three or four like that were on the Rebels that were like Chris Thomas and a couple other guys.
Oh, yeah.
And I take my skates, always take my skates, because you never know when you might get an opportunity.
Right.
And so I went up to the guy, to the director of it, and I says, I would like to help with the camp. And he says, do you need any help? And he says, yeah, you do. He says, John Harrington just left. Can't do it. I don't know if you know who John Harrington is. He played in the 80 Olympics.
Oh, okay.
Those
are big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Big skates to fill.
Yeah, I can replace him.
no problem. Put me in, coach.
Yeah. Where's the foil? Anyway, I was put in, and I was given the opportunity. I got a pretty outgoing personality, but that was very intimidating.
I bet.
And I just sat there for the first two or three sessions and didn't say much. Well, everybody had to ref, and I'm not a good skater, so I'm reffing, and I get in the way, and the puck hits me right in the chest. And I go, and I fall down on the ground, and everybody gets around me and wonders what's going on. And I says, I think I got kicked by my wife harder than that. And that put me in the groove with them, and I did it for 16 years. And
wow.
I always tell everybody I was a gopher, but it was really, really good for me, and I got to learn a lot. I learned how to recruit. I learned how to evaluate. And things like this, things that you need. And you're talking about not thinking you got it all, you don't need to learn anymore. I tell people that if they will go to a mic practice, they will learn something.
Yeah, for sure.
And if we just go and study what they're doing, there's a lot of great drills that are given out in the youth hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary,
there
you
is.
Know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, that there's so much that you can learn from any practice you go to.
Yeah.
And it's not that you probably know a lot, but it's still there's a lot to learn.
And that's that was the eye opener that I got from my level four, and then I tried to take that same attitude. I think that's one of the things that kind of changed my attitude of coaching is that, man, and I don't know, maybe I just didn't want to go to the level four that day and thought I could skip it and just get the cert, but man. Every chance you get, there's something you can learn. And you can learn from so many coaches. You can learn from a guy that's never played, which a lot of people – because like you're saying, people are like, well, who are you to come take over this?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter if I've never played before. If I'm putting in the time and effort to coach and I'm learning, and you can be a book-smart guy that can coach. And there have been players or coaches in the NHL that were never players. So you're right. I mean, there's always opportunity to learn. And that's something that comes from being a fireman too, is that you can learn every day.
Yeah.
You can. I've done the job for 21 years. You did it for 31 years. But every day on that job, every day in hockey, you can learn something more for sure.
And you can learn from a little guy. Any age you can learn something from. And it's just, there's a saying that says that kids don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Oh, that's a great saying.
I like that.
And that's kind of the attitude that I had. So I'll tell you a little story. I'm skating around, and these are mites skating around. And so I go up. This is like the second practice. And I go up to this little boy, and I says, what's your name? None of you. And I says, so that's a pretty good name. He says, none of your business. So there's all kinds of things that you can learn from kids.
Yeah.
The coaching is a never ending profession.
Yeah, for sure.
And if coaches don't get Eagles out of coaching, I think they're doing something wrong, because there's so many compliments come to you because you're a coach, and that you're influencing somebody.
Right.
And it can be the little guys, it can be the big guys, and
And hopefully that's what coaches sometimes lose sight of. That I just posted an article on our Utah Puck Report Facebook page about that same thing. Just keep the focus on, like, helping these kids just have fun and develop them into people, and getting lost in wins and losses and getting all caught up in that is the wrong way to go about it until you're getting
sportsmanship.
Everybody's getting paid for it. Yeah. So Don, we've talked a lot with Matt, rest his soul, about the SPA and the legendary SPA team, but I would say the rival to the SPA is the Rebels. And that's how did the Rebels come about? You were telling me a little bit about the logo, but when did you create the Rebels?
It started in about 86, and all the like the Snows and the Levies and the Burnses and stuff were all on the state team.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of good players out there. And so I says, hey, this isn't the day before you had to go through all the rigmarole the state put you through now to get a team going. And I says, hey, let's just form a team and have some fun. And so that's what we did. And there, Stacy was on it, and I can't remember anybody else.
All the Furnesses.
Of course, my own son was on it. Darren was on it. Whack was on it.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, we just went around to Idaho Falls, to Boise, when they just had that one rink.
Yep.
And they wanted to kick us out of that rink because they were playing dirty laundry and they had that big old ghetto blaster on there. anyway, that's how that got started. And then somebody says, we got to get a name. And I found some old purple jerseys. To this day, I can't remember how we got them, but we had old purple, ugly purple jerseys. And somebody says, well, we got to have a name. And somebody says, let's call ourselves the Korth Rebels.
Oh.
And that's kind of how the name came about.
Yeah.
And then the next year, all those kids were out of midget age. So they went to the juniors. And so that's when I started the juniors. And we had that team for 6 years.
Yeah.
And it was the junior C's, which is the bottom of the juniors. The juniors are, of course, as you know, is organized a little bit different than back in that day. But the junior C's are still around. They're basically kids that stay at home, but are good hockey players, but stay around. But we had some kids from the University of Utah at that time on our team.
Yeah.
And out of the six, this is one of the things I'm proudest of is with the Rebels. And probably the Rebels is probably – I never stopped thinking about them.
Oh.
You know, you think about them a lot. It's not like constant, but in the 6 years that we did it, we went to Nationals four times. And the last year we had the national tournament here. And I did – And I'm bragging now, and I'm probably banging my drum too hard, but
that's what you're here for.
But I went and did all the hard work to get that Nationals, not like they did for the U14 tournament, where people went from up.
Right, where you had like a committee, and yeah.
One of my goals is not to wear suits. I said, anybody that wears a suit's going to sit. And so I didn't want them scrappy or anything like that, or torn Levi's and all that. But and then the second thing was I wanted to have a national tournament here.
Yeah.
And so I went to the Salt Lake Convention Center or whatever they call it, and And they put me together a great big nice package and all the hotels and everything on it. And I had to get $300. So I went to the state meeting, got $300. I was happy for that.
Wow, yeah.
But I'd have paid the $300 out of my pocket if I hadn't, because I wanted it. And so I went over to juniors, over to the national, what they call the Congress, the USA Congress. It's in June every year.
Yeah.
And presented did my presentation, and there was two others that did it, but they never brought no money. But I was the last one to get up. So I say, hey, I think I've already got this in the bag. I'm the only one that's got money. And so we got it. And then after we come back and it's all that stuff, the state took over, and they did an awesome job of putting it together.
So what year was that you hosted it?
93.
Okay.
Wow. And So that's how that came about, and we become really good friends with the Marquette Juniors, the Junior C team in Marquette, Michigan.
Yeah,
and we become really good friends with them, and we when they came for that nationals, and so we took them out and did some little things with them, and
yeah,
it was great.
Do you remember? So tell me some of the key players that you remember from your last team there from the Rebels that year.
You mean the local kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, both Levy. Well, not Jeff. Jeff played with us 1 year, and then he went to New Hampshire.
Yep.
And then he went on from there. The Levies, the Burnses, the Stacy.
You mentioned Chris Thomas before.
Chris Thomas, Burnsy, of course.
Yeah. So a lot of the kids that ended up getting out of here came through your program at some point in those years, right? So
yeah. Well, Lodato was another one.
Oh yeah.
We don't hear nothing about Mike Lodato, but he was a tough customer.
He almost killed me one time.
Yeah, he was tough. But he. I just love those boys because they worked hard, and basically, I don't have a system where you trap and all that stuff. I had some little things that I did, you know, like two people on the puck when it's in your defensive zone and stuff like that.
Right.
But I wanted hard work and people to work hard and to be play as a team, and I think one of my strong points is that I can see talent.
Yeah.
I've been pretty successful without being really a super, super awesome coach. But I've been pretty successful because I think I know how to choose kids.
Yeah.
And so...
It's not your skating, right?
I want it. That first thing I look for is skaters if they can't skate.
That's funny. When I think of Don Korth, the first thing that comes to my mind is going into any arena where you're coaching, and you can just hear you yelling, skate, skate, skate.
Yeah, so I still look today.
Yeah, I know. Even in men's league, I can hear you coaching from the stands yelling at kids to skate.
I have to tell you a story, talk about that. Randy Lewis, I seen Randy Lewis and Mike Manrick was in the rink when I was over there at the A-Court a lot more than I am now, and it was kind of working there. And they come in, and we're having a skate, and Randy stopped me, and he says, hey, I went to Cottonwood the other night, and I thought you were in the rink. And he says, somebody let Don Korth in. Hey, all I could hear him was screaming.
So, that's all right to be passionate.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit. You've mentioned before that you obviously had a lot of dealings with Matt Brickley. Mm-hmm. You guys brought these two, you know, I mean, those are the two core teams that have been here since the 80s. You've had to have had some kind of run-ins with Matt. You got some good stories about Matt?
Yeah, I liked Matt a lot. One thing I liked about Matt, you knew that he was honest, had integrity. Some people don't believe that, but he knew what he was fighting for. He just didn't come in there halfway and want to say, hey, this is the way it is. he fought for what he wanted, and sometimes I thought he just went too far, or it wasn't really worth the fight. To me, I would have just said,
right.
But he did it. One night he was reffing. He reffed a lot of the games that I played that was up for my teams in high school. And I coached high school, different high school teams for about 15 years. So I've seen him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And one night he was, and I was just screaming away at him, and I never called him a name or anything like that, but just screaming at him, telling him, you know, you're all this stuff.
And, oh, yeah.
And after the game, I went up to him and I wanted to shake his hand, and he didn't shake it.
Oh.
And he says, "Get away from me." Of course, not that nice.
Right.
And I was going to go back to him, and he turns around and he puts his hand like this, never touched me. Says, "Get away from me." And not that way again. But so I left, and I felt really bad. And I didn't, and I thought about it a lot, because things like that bother me. And so I thought about it and felt bad that we didn't end on good terms.
Right.
And I don't know how you feel, but when I get something like that happens to me, I want to see that person the next day.
Right, right.
And so about 3 or 4 days later, he came in. We were in the rink the same time. I walked up to him and shook his head. "How you doing tonight, Matt?" And we talked. Never said a word about that other stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's one of the things about hockey is a lot happens. It's a passionate game.
Yeah.
There's when you're playing contact, it's definitely a violent game. And,
yeah. Leave it on the ice.
And yeah, you got to be able to leave it on the ice, yeah. and be friends the next day.
And that's one thing I pride myself of is that I don't go beyond. And I try to teach my kids not to go beyond the locker room.
Yeah.
And stay within reason. And when they get in fights, well, in high school, they used to get in fights in the hall there in Cottonwood. You know how Cottonwood is.
Oh, yeah.
But they used to get in fights there, try to get in fights all the time, and I'd stand in the middle, and one other story about Matt is that I get off on tangents. I forgot what it was. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You know what? We can come back to it if you
want. Yeah.
So what?
If I remember, I'll tell you.
I have a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about. And so now you've helped a lot with women's hockey around here. And who's your partner in all that?
Morgan Marinetti.
Morgan, yeah. So tell me what's going on now. Are you helping with the University of Utah at all?
No. I wouldn't mind helping them out. I don't know if they asked me, I would probably do it.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not doing anything with them at all. Morgan and I do a lot of things together. She's been involved with me since 13.
And that includes the Course Rebel Foundation.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how that came about. So the Course Rebel Foundation is it mostly you getting kids into hockey? Are you growing the game, or do you go beyond that?
I honestly believe I'm growing the game. Not in a fancy way. I don't go advertise, but like kids come to me all the time.
Yep.
I'm having a camp. I'll just give you an example. I have a camp in June at Cottonwood, and it's one night a week for 6 weeks. But anyway, I go and hand these flyers out. I don't know what age you grew. Peewees?
Yeah, Peewee and
Mike. I hand them out to Squirts and Peewees, and I handed this flyer out to a team from the county rink, from Murray Rink, and the coach comes, and I'm walking out around the lobby there and at A-Court, and the coach comes out, and he grabs me. He says, "Don," one of my players says, "I like Don. He just started me in hockey."
Yeah,
and
awesome.
And that to me is saying, yes, I do grow hockey, not in a big way, but in a way that helps kids get started. And a lot of kids would not start without that equipment.
Right.
Mm. And the way that Gorth Rebels got started, I've been thinking for a long, long time, how can I stay in hockey and still contribute and do the things that and be around it. Because I tell everybody I was going to retire, but that was just like talking to the wall. So I decided I just tell everybody now. No, I'm not retiring. I'll die before.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I thought, what can I do? And I thought, well, I can pay a fee for a couple kids. You know, the fee is pretty expensive. $300 is around $300. It might be more or less than that, but that's basically what it is. And so that's what I was going to do originally. So I went to Chris Builder and said, hey, if you got somebody that needs help, let me know. Well, they work with their people with them people, and so he didn't really give me anybody to help out. And then and so I said, I want to get something that gives me an idea, gives me a name, something that people can relate to.
Right.
And so that's how Corth Rebels, and I'm not leaving the rebels out of anything. And
yeah, that's part of your identity.
Yeah. Corth Rebels, and so I just add the foundation. And I tried to get it to be a 501c3, but it was so hard. I asked people that are lawyers and all that stuff, and they said, oh, yeah, we can help you, but nobody ever helped me. But Mike Holmes come to me one day, and he says, Donnie, I can help you. He says, I put two or three nonprofits together, and he gave me all the forms and stuff, and he helped me start it, and then I did the rest of it myself.
Oh.
I did it all by myself.
It's a lot of work.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
And then they write back to you, do you own the arena? Yes, no, but I wish I did. And but no, and it took a while, and it took almost a year and a half, and you have to have a bank account and all that stuff. It's not just something that they fly through. And the day I got that, I remember it was in February of 2012 that I got it. Says you're now a non-profit 501c3.
Yeah,
great.
I jumped through so many hoops with Guns N' Hoses trying to get that started, and it was always such a pain. And it's same thing every year. People were like, "Hey, I'll help you." And I had lawyers. At one point, Tom Horgus was going to do it for me, and
yeah.
I had people that would step
Tom
up.
Horgus, I remember him.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah,
but people would step up, and then the event passes by, and then people aren't as interested in helping anymore, and nothing gets done. And year after year, it would go on. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, that's the problem with stuff like this. Is that's one reason why it's always a struggle is because people say, "Oh, I'll do this. I can do this for you." I mean, I tried to get a board of directors going, and we never did get it going. Some of it's my own fault, because I don't know how to organize it probably properly, but just the same. And then you'd ask people to write letters, because I write like I talk.
Yeah.
So anyway, and they say, yeah, they will, but they don't. So I ended up, most of the letters I write, like to sponsors and stuff, is letters that I steal from somebody else.
Yeah.
Everything in my junior days, I never thought of a thought. I just stole everything.
Borrowed.
That's how I run my camp. That's how I rent. That's all the drills I have, all the stuff I do for my camp. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel.
No.
I agree.
I took
my camp is identical to Shattuck St. Mary's hockey camp during the summer. I think that's smarter. I think the best leaders are the ones that go out and, you know, I add a little bit of personal touch, but it's best if you know what works. You've seen what works for other people.
Yeah.
Just kind of adopt that, make it your own.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
I agree with you. And when I had my juniors, I went around to about 25, 30. In 1 year, I counted them over 40 people to get $5,000. And that was going around and trying to present myself and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. And, of course, you go to hockey people first. Almost everybody in hockey would donate.
Right.
And anybody that you had on your team that had any money, that's who I hit up the hardest.
Right.
And I'm sure they're used to it because that's how it always happens,
for
sure.
Yeah, it does. And if if I was that way and I would, if I had the money that I could do that, I would do it.
Well, you used to do a lot of that on your own out of your firefighter salary, out of a civil servant salary. I know that you were paying for jerseys and you were paying for stuff back in the day.
I paid for a lot of jerseys. I paid for a lot of meals coming home, too.
Yeah, I bet.
Like in Everton or Bellington, Washington, we came in home from Canada, and nobody had any money, of course.
Right.
Because that's just the way it was. You know that. If you don't want to step up in that, you better not get into it.
Right. Because a lot of those kids are
going to
end up with
money to your kids. If you're going to loan money to your kids and you want it back, you better quit. You better put it in your pocket. But anyway, we all stopped there and had that silver in Bellingham.
And that all comes out of your civil service wages.
We never heard another word from him until we got to Boise, Idaho.
Maybe that
was in the morning.
It's probably worth the money.
Yeah.
It's always worth the money to have everybody sleep.
All right, Don. So that's what you do now, is now you run the Course Rebel Foundation.
Yeah.
And a part of that, and we didn't really discuss it, is that you have a lot of people donate their gently used equipment to you. And jerseys and whatever, and then you're able to outfit and help pay fees for kids that are just getting started.
Yeah.
And not just kids. I sent a ton of people your way. I mean, that's one of the reasons I came and donated all that equipment to you, is because I know I send you a lot of kids too.
Yeah,
and I'm constantly giving your number out for, because now with the show, and definitely when I was with the Grizzlies and stuff, I get kids asking me all the time how to get into it, and you get parents asking you, and a lot of parents can't afford it.
Yeah,
you know, you get these single moms or whatever that just can't afford to go drop.
Yeah.
Hockey is overpriced right now, and even entry level skates, and then all the entry level equipment. We had a stick manufacturer on here a couple weeks ago, and he's talking about how sticks are $280 a piece now.
Yeah,
now granted, not for a peewee, but
I got my own philosophy on equipment, what people pay for equipment.
Yeah.
And even the upper kids that play three practices a week and play three games on a weekend, plays five or six times a year or a week.
Yeah.
Nobody needs that expensive stuff. They only want it because Crosby's got it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And I've said that too. Like, if I play four or five times a week, and even when I'm with the Grizzlies, I don't notice. You know, practicing every day at high levels, you start to notice different parts of your equipment and how maybe you would change it. But playing three or four times a week, you don't notice it as much, and you're fine with just a retail, off-the-shelf anything.
Yeah, you take a pro player, they need the good stuff because they put a lot of pressure on their skates, everything they wear.
Yeah,
because they play so fast and so hard, and they're strong. But you put it on a little peewee kid, it's a waste of time.
Right.
And I just think that I'm watching a game, and it's a squirt game, and this kid's playing with a $150 stick cut off.
Yeah.
To his level. You tell me why would
and
a
super,
parent
that makes
spend
it,
that
and
kind
that
co- of money?
Totally changes it.
Why would a parent spend that much money to cut off a stick halfway? I mean, I tell parents, brand new parents, I tell them, you don't go, you get the bottom of the line, and you will have great equipment. And I told them, I said, my boys, my grandkids played play pretty tough hockey, and they're strong and stuff. But I said, they never had anything like that. And I said, so I know from a fact, from my own experience, that it works.
Right.
And so.
It works, and you know, getting kids into hockey now, that's mm-hmm. what's important, and I think you're doing an amazing job. And
yeah, we work hard at it, and I get a lot of recognition from it and a lot of great compliments from it.
Yeah,
but and I've been accused of doing it for glory, but that's a bunch of bull. If I was doing it for glory, I would have chosen something better than it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I can't see who would even say that, because and we're running out of time, but what I want to say, that kind of actually brings it right to a great point, is that, man, you've been giving since 1978, and your name is known here, and it's not because you've done anything for glory, it's because you're constantly there And people have known for 40-plus years that they can count on Don Korth to help. And you said it again. I mean, you're a busy man. But if the University of Utah reached out to you, you'd help coach their women's team. So you've helped all these kids, and a lot of them got out of town and got to play junior A. And some of them went on to play in college, Ruggiero, and, you know, these guys that got to go on and play in college. And they all owe thanks to you. We all owe our own thanks to you, and it's been amazing. Thank you for 40 years of helping grow the sport and be just an awesome person in this sport. It's fun. It's fun to get to know you and to be around you. It was awesome to get to work with you at Sutley County and the Unified Fire with you.
Yeah.
And it's you're a heck of a guy. It's
I appreciate that. I tell people all the time I belong to the best two fraternities in the world, firefighting and hockey. I said, you can go anywhere, and you could, if you know a hockey person, no matter whether you know them or not, you can go up to them and say, I need some help with my car. Or you can go to a fire station and say, I need some help with my car or something.
Yep.
Or you have a problem.
I'd agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
You know who else probably needs some love is your wife, man, because putting up with 40 years of you giving all of your spare time.
Yeah.
So do people give her enough thanks?
That's another discussion in it. So,
next podcast, part two.
My wife knows a lot about hockey.
I bet.
And so you don't want to test her too much. You might find out what she does really know. So.
Well, all right, Don. For the whole community, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for coming out and sharing some stories with you. I feel like you're somebody that we're going to have on later in the summer or something to come back. And because I know that you have enough stories to fill up your own show. After 40 years of dealing with, I mean, not just your own one podcast. I mean, you could have your own podcast, a weekly podcast of just Don Korth telling stories about hockey. Okay, for everybody else out there, just one more thanks for Don Korth.
Thank you. We appreciate being here and letting me talk.
And Gary's looking forward to having you out at some of his kids' practices and helping out there.
Yeah, I see him almost every Thursday
at
the A-Court.
And then for everybody else, if you want to learn more about what's going on in Utah hockey and you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, it's super simple. And Don and I were talking about it earlier. All you got to do is text the word puck to 57500, and it'll come back and it'll have a bunch of instructions. And it doesn't matter if you're on – if you have an Apple or one of the other units.
Super easy.
It's super easy. So it's Google Play or iTunes. It's super simple. And if you can't find it that way, just go to kslsports.com, go under podcasts. We're going to have tons of stuff there. And that's it, Matt. Don, once again, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Gary?
Absolutely.
Thanks for your love and support.
Of course. It's hockey, baby.
Thanks for being an awesome hockey person as well. And that's it for this week of the Utah Puck Report.